Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Joseph Pache. San Francisco has been a nationwide leader in recycling, but is it a victim of its own success? Residents are doing a better job than ever at sorting their trash and separating their recyclables, so much so that the size of our recycling bins has increased while the size of our trash bins has shrunk. Yet last month, San Francisco announced it wouldn't meet its goal of zero waste by 2020, and there are growing concerns that more of our trash is ending up in landfills. Despite our best efforts and enthusiasm for recycling, we're clearly doing something wrong. How did we get off track, and what will it take to hit our target? And what does China have to do with it? Well, we'll get answers to those questions in the conversation ahead tonight with our three guests. We start with Debbie Raffel. She's the director of the San Francisco Department of the Environment. She works closely with the city's refuse collector, Recology, on best practices for efficient recycling and composting. Welcome, Debbie.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here tonight.
We're also joined here in the studio by Katie Tang. She's supervisor for the City of San Francisco representing District 4 and the sponsor of legislation that would ban plastic straws and other single-use items in the city. Welcome, Supervisor Tang.
Thank you for having me.
And finally, we're joined by Catherine Kellogg. She is a Berkeley-based founder of the website goingzerowaste.com and author of 101 Ways to Go Zero Waste, a book that with actionable tips that's due out next spring. Welcome, Catherine.
Thank you.
And of course, we invite you, our listeners, to join our conversation. We'll put out that phone number now. It's 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can also email us at cityvisions@kalw.org, post a comment at the KLW website, or tweet us at cityvisionskalw. So Debbie Raffel of the San Francisco Department of the Environment, I wanted to start with you. When I did this topic several years back, we were doing so well. It was so exciting. We were heading towards zero waste by 2020. What happened?
What happened was people are buying more stuff. So as our population increases, we are doing better and better every year with composting and recycling. More and more is going into our blue bins and our green bins. The problem is more is also going into our black bin. So the whole generation side of waste is going up and up. The Amazon effect came forward, and all of a sudden we have cardboard coming out of our ears and all the packaging from all the food that we buy. Convenience happened in that time. And the other thing that happened is construction. San Francisco is booming when it comes to cranes and development, and all that construction waste is supposed to be diverted, at least most of it is, and we're having a hard time collecting all of it and making sure it's ending up in the right place. So the good news is there's lots of opportunity for improvement, and we've got the tools and the systems in place. We just need people to do it with us.
You sound optimistic, despite the assertion that we're not making our goal in 2020.
Well, that goal of zero waste by 2020, we adopted that in 2003. The Board of Supervisors said, we need to get to zero waste. Commission on the Environment, give us a date. And that date was put out knowing that it was incredibly ambitious, knowing that it would be a stretch, but with that feeling that we must challenge ourselves, because if we don't go for the stars, if we aren't ambitious in our goals, then we're not going to try hard enough. And we have come a long way. Are we off track? I would say we're on track, but with a speed bump along the way.
Well, but we're not just not getting to the target. We're sliding back, aren't we?
We were sliding back last year. We started to go up in the generation of to our black bin. That has since stabilized, but we need it to go down. We need to go down to get to zero. We've got ways to do that, and I'm excited to talk about that tonight.
So let's unpack a little bit of what you said in the beginning comments there about the factors that have led to this bump in the road, as you call it. The population increasing. Is it just sheer numbers, or is it the newness of the population? People are not familiar with our culture of recycling.
That's an awesome point. It's both here in San Francisco. San Francisco, since 1990, has grown in population by 20%. That's a significant growth. And our economy has grown by 111%, which means that business is booming, number of employees is going up, residents is going up. San Francisco has an incredibly transient population. We have so many renters. 70% of our residents are renters, and those renters tend to become new renters. So we have turnover challenges, which makes our outreach message very difficult sometimes.
So it's hard to keep it going and yeah. build on it. Is there any sense that the people who are coming into the city are, for whatever reason, less interested in the environment or less likely to recycle for other reasons that might not be obvious?
We did a survey of, I would call them young people compared to my age. So we're looking at 25 to 35-year-olds. And we asked them, do you know about recycling? And they all knew. Do you know how to recycle? Oh, yes, they knew exactly how to recycle. Do you have access to recycling? Oh, yes, we have access. Do you recycle? No, not so much. And so we said, why not? Since you have convenience, you have awareness, what's missing? And it was this feeling of it's just too much work. So I'm really hoping that Catherine can share her secret to why it's not so much work and why actually all of us can do it pretty easily.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. So it's laziness, basically, what it comes down to?
I call it a culture of convenience, and I don't know how we make it so much convenient.
Okay, but that's an important point here, is that it's not that suppose that people don't know which bin to put things in, but it's just it gets to a level of inconvenience, and that gets to be too much.
I would add one more sort of wonky statistic that since we put in mandatory composting and recycling in the mid-2000s, now 99% of San Franciscans have access to composting and recycling. So that's every business, that's every resident. Really, it's not a matter of not having the ability to do it. It's having the consciousness.
And then let's move to, so that's the residential side of things, or mostly we were talking about residential users here. How about the commercial sector? You mentioned construction construction waste not necessarily getting to the right places, but are there other aspects of how the commercial sector is contributing to this problem when it comes to composting or recycling?
One of our biggest challenges is actually large, complicated commercial office buildings, especially office buildings that have lots of different tenants in them. It's very hard for us to hold accountable all the employees and the building management at the same time to make sure that things are getting sorted properly.
So when you have to sort, no pun intended, the amount of the problem that's related to residential behaviors versus commercial behaviors, how do they stack up?
That's a great question. Our biggest generators are large commercial office buildings and large multifamily buildings. So the residential towers and the office towers, that's our biggest challenge. And I have a dirty word in waste management, and my dirty word is trash chutes. Trash chutes are the single biggest challenge in the large residential office residential towers, because people can sneak their bad behavior in the chute.
So does that mean that the city is then therefore targeting these areas more so than, let's say, single-family homes or duplexes?
It's an and, not an or. We have to do it all, because we need our residential community to lead by example. And frankly, many of our residents who live in single-family homes are also employees, and they can lead by example in their workplaces. So our biggest challenge on the compliance side, on the sort of enforcement side, will be focused on the large commercial and the large multifamily.
What you haven't mentioned yet is that when people do recycle, so there's a problem with whether they're recycling properly. Tell us more about that.
Yeah. So what we find is our blue stream and our green stream are actually pretty good. Once people decide to sort, they do a very good job of it. The problem is the black bin. 60% of what is in the black bin right now actually should be going in the blue bin or the green bin. You mentioned the changes we've had in our recycling program, how the black bin's gotten smaller and the blue bin's gotten larger. The reason the blue bin got larger is because we're accepting a large amount of new material in that blue bin, from milk cartons to what we call aseptic containers, which is a really wonky word for juice boxes and all the boxed liquids you can buy. You can put plastic bags if they're bagged inside another plastic bag inside the blue bin. All that cardboard you're getting from Amazon goes in the blue bin. So that blue bin is bigger, because lots more can go in. So that 60% in the black bin, we need people to take a look at their black bin and say, really, what shouldn't be in here?
And is there also a concern that when people are putting things into the blue bin, that they're not quite as clean as they need to be for to be recyclable?
When we start talking about China and the importance of keeping things clean, we can go into more detail on that. I would say that San Franciscans are generally pretty good at keeping their blue bin clean and dry. That's the thing we need most, is that blue bin is clean and dry, meaning the items you put in are clean and dry. We're not asking people to rinse every bit of plastic. Scraping it out really well with a spatula is probably sufficient, because it's very important not to have moisture in that blue bin.
All right. We'll get to China in a moment, but let's stay local here and turn to Catherine Kellogg. You've been writing about your life's passion, which is to really decrease the amount of waste in your life and how much you're and the tips for reducing and reusing and recycling. And we'll talk about refusing in a moment as well. What do you make of Debbie Raphael's data that shows that the 25 to 35 set just couldn't be bothered to recycle, despite the fact that they know about this?
I'm honestly so shocked. I'm flabbergasted, really. I'm from Arkansas, and I know so many people from the South back home that would kill to have the kind of access that we have. And it was hurtful to hear that people really don't care that much.
And so, and do you have a sense of why that might be?
This is honestly the first that I'm actually hearing this. I had not heard this about people my age, so I think I'm just in a state of shock, really.
Okay. All right. Well, while you're like regrouping there, let me turn to Katie Tang from the Board of Supervisors representing District 4. How long have you been on the board?
Almost 6 years now.
Okay. And what have you seen from your vantage point about how the city has approached this issue about heading towards zero waste? What's your assessment of how we've been doing and what are the challenges that lie ahead to get us back on track?
I mean, I think we have an incredible Department of Environment with a lot of outreach staff who literally go business to business, door to door, to talk to residents, to talk to small business owners or big business owners about what it is that they have to do. So I think we have incredible staff, and I don't know how other cities operate, whether they even have a department environment doing this kind of work. So I think that as long as we continue that and continue setting high goals for ourselves, that we will be able to get ourselves, I think, you know, on the right track. But it also sometimes does take, you know, legislation to push for things. I remember when the city first introduced the composting legislation, and it made people in our neighborhoods feel uncomfortable that they'd have to go and sort through their trash and figure out what went into the green bin. And so we've come a long way when I think about that. I was a staff member at that time and remember the difficult vote. It wasn't a unanimous vote. And so fast forward to now, I couldn't even imagine life without composting. Like when I go down to Southern California and I can't compost the banana peel, it feels very strange. So I think we have to keep at it. And legislation is, again, sometimes, you know, some people can feel like, well, government is here to control every aspect of my life. Here goes another piece of legislation. Eye roll, you know, but sometimes you need it in place for it to cause people to think twice about their actions. And you can start little and go big.
Yeah. So just to remind listeners, the recycling became mandatory in 2009 and composting in 2012. So we have legislation already. Of course, the first question people are going to say is, what are we doing to enforce that legislation? So I'll say, who wants to take that first? Debbie.
Yeah, we have basically de-emphasized enforcement, helping people, as Supervisor Tang talked about, through our outreach efforts. And it's gotten us very successful. We had our absolute lowest year in 2008 in terms of disposal, and our green and blue have been growing ever since. We're at a point now where I think it's time we understand to stop saying please and to start ratcheting up enforcement. So we have abilities through the rate process to charge people for contaminating their black bin with recyclables and compostables. And we are working on legislation right now that just recently got introduced to look at doing enforcement in large commercial and residential office towers.
So were these two pieces of legislation introduced without any enforcement behind them? Is that what you're saying, since you have to go and get new legislation to go after people who aren't recycling?
The enforcement elements were de-emphasized when we initially passed them. It was such a radical thing to do, to mandate that people sort and make it not just a nice-to-have but a must-have, that we really wanted to learn from our experience. Nobody else had done it before. We needed to learn how does it work, what are people having the biggest difficulty with before we came down hard with enforcement.
And what would that look like? Do you have a sense of how do you operationalize enforcement?
You have to do audits. You have to sit there, you have to go to commercial dumpsters, which is where we're going to start. We're not going to focus on single family homes and go in people's black bins. We're going to look at the large generators first and take a look at where they're having problems. We're going to offer them assistance. We're going to do as much hand holding as we can. And if that's not successful, then we're going to move to enforcement.
And who's held responsible, right? You said this earlier on. You know, it's the commercial property owner that is going to be audited, but they perhaps are not necessarily, or it's not, you can't trace it back to the offender. So how's it going to work?
Well, you'd be surprised what you can tell looking at somebody's dumpster. You can tell which commercial entity often the trash is coming from. But you raise a really important point, is that's accountability. And so because the enforcement's going to be on this proposed legislation, actually, we don't have anything set in stone yet. It's going to be a conversation between the property manager and building owner and their tenants who are helping to pay their garbage bills.
So I wonder if how that would actually work out. I could imagine that the fine gets spread over everybody, and then everyone starts to kind of like monitor each other.
And then there we could use all the help we could get.
Cameras in the chutes.
Oh,
so back to you, Catherine Kellogg. It seems like you've recomposed yourself now that you were earlier shocked to hear that 25 and 30 to 35 year olds here in the city are just kind of not into recycling just because it just takes too much effort. So how about this? What would you say to your cohort to get them to see this differently?
Well, after having a moment to compose myself, I think one of the main issues is a lot of people aren't aware of the magnitude of the problem. Mm. The average American throws out 4.4 pounds of trash every day. That's an insane amount. And when you're looking at the waste upstream, that number only grows because with production comes more waste. We're only seeing a very small portion that we throw away. And when you start framing it in the mentality of resources, everything we throw away is a resource. And so when we're looking at that, I'm still so shocked. It's just such an enormous number. And we have this day that's marked called Earth Overshoot Day, where we've consumed all the resources the Earth can sustainably produce for the coming year. Mm-hmm. And last year, we hit that on August 2nd. So we're basically borrowing time from the future. And when we start looking at our trash as a part of the solution and a part of this bigger picture, I think that maybe our minds might start to change when it comes to the recycling and the trash and how we're viewing these things.
You said something earlier, Debbie Raphael, is that, you know, a lot of convenience in our economy, in the way we live our lives. So back to you, Catherine, how much do you think we have to create more convenience in order to get people to do this? Is it enough just to kind of try to shame people into saying, hey, you're borrowing against the future here? Do we have to think about new ways to make this easier for people to do?
I think that we have to have multiple solutions, but one of the best things we can do is simply to buy less. Like we said with the Amazon habit, we overconsume. We just buy way too much stuff. way too much stuff. And a lot of that stuff we don't need. It goes into drawers. It sits unused. It's stuffed in the basement, a closet. And the next time that we use it is when we're cleaning out for a garage sale. So I tell everyone to try and wait at least 30 days before making any purchase. And I find that if you wait 30 days, most of the time you don't really need it. And as far as convenience items goes with food and other things, because a lot of us are so busy and we're so on the go, is finding simple solutions that we can harness to maybe make those less wasteful.
Okay. Well, let me reintroduce the program at this point. This is City Visions on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're talking about recycling and how San Francisco is faring in its commitment to zero waste by 2020. And spoiler, if you haven't tuned in just until now, we're not going to make it. And so we're trying to find ways to get people back on track with our guests, Debbie Raffel, director of the San Francisco Department of the Environment, Supervisor Katie Tang, representing District 4, and Catherine Kellogg, Berkeley-based founder of the website GoingZeroWaste.com and author of a new book coming out next spring, 101 Ways to Get Zero to Go Zero Waste. We welcome you, our listeners, to join in our conversation. What's it like for you to recycle and compost and sort your trash? Do you find this to be inconvenient? And tell us what would make it less inconvenient for you. And for those of you who are doing it, tell us what works for you and how we can do this better. The number to dial to join our conversation is 866-798-TALK. Again, that's 866-798-8255. You can email us at cityvisions@kalw.org, post a comment at the KALW website, or tweet us at cityvisionskalw. So while we're getting some calls coming in, I wanted to turn back to China. So Debbie Raffel, as I mentioned in the introduction, China has something to do with this. Tell us more about that.
All that material we collect in our blue bin needs to go somewhere. And, you know, we can have a wonderful conversation about what happens to everything in our green bin because it's the most hopeful, wonderful climate change story on the planet. But China has to do with our blue bin. How do we take all those metals and plastics and paper and make new materials out of them? Because after all, that's the whole point. When it comes to San Francisco, about 80% of what goes in the blue bin is paper, mostly cardboard, but lots of other paper. And generally, paper goes to China. Our metals and plastics tend to stay in California. Most of them have markets here, though some of them we have to ship out to Southeast Asia. China was the big recipient for San Francisco for paper. And the Chinese government decided that, and I cannot speak to their motivation, I can just speak to what they said, was that starting in 2018, they would only accept paper and recyclables with a 0.5% contamination rate. 0.5. That is an order of magnitude less than some of the cleanest recycling streams. Mm. So they knew when they set that standard that there was no way for anyone to meet that. So they essentially shut off the recycling of paper from outside entities in China. Now, the good news for San Francisco is we have some of the cleanest paper, cleanest recycling streams in the country. We recently invested $14 million in Recycle Central here in San Francisco. So we have the finest optical sorters and equipment. Our material is very clean, not clean enough to go to China. But because it's so clean, we had no problem finding other markets for it. So San Franciscans, you can rest assured that no matter what happens in China, we have markets for our materials. What the future says, though, is as more and more people are going to smaller markets, the value of those materials is likely going to go down. How much money we get for our materials will likely go down. Right now, the revenue for our recycling helps to reduce our garbage rates, the rates that people pay on a monthly basis. If we don't get as much revenue in, it's possible that the garbage rates will go up.
So basically, what happens, the recycling gets sorted, it goes on a marketplace, so to speak, and then it gets bought, and that money goes back to San Francisco.
That's correct.
And if the market changes, then so does the price.
That's correct.
And so tell us about how San Francisco was able to shift and find new buyers. I was doing some reading and hearing that in Oregon, big problem, lots of papers go and other recyclables going right to landfill, and people are not bothering to hold it until they can find a new buyer. Sounds like we haven't had that problem here.
We have not, and I think it's very important for people to understand that you need to keep sorting. Giving up and saying, well, it's not going to be recycled anyway, is actually incorrect. We have a wonderful waste management company in Recology. You mentioned them at the top of the hour. And Recology has been watching very carefully. They are savvy market handlers, I don't know what the right word is, and they have been able to find markets very well for all of our materials.
And so just to make sure that our materials stay as marketable as possible, why don't you tell us what's really important when we're recycling, what things are important to remember?
Clean and dry. The blue bin needs to be clean and dry. So anything you put in your blue bin, if it's mucky and it's made of paper, it needs to go in the green bin. So those pizza boxes that have cheese stuck on them, even though they're cardboard, those go in the green bin. You need the papers and the plastic and the metals to be fairly clean and dry and sorted into the blue bin. That's the most important thing we can do.
So I have a to-go bin, container. Sorry, Catherine, I use those. And I rinse it out, but I have to wait till it's dry to put it into the same bin with the paper, correct?
It's better to shake it out as much as you can. I won't say you have to let it sit till it's bone dry, but it's good to shake out the excess water if you can before you put it into the blue bin.
And then, like, you know, there's all these little things that I'm, like, not sure what to do with, like the sticker on fruit. What do I do with that?
So what we tell people is if you can tear it, it can go in the green bin. So that little sticker on fruit, if you can rip it yourself, then that little piece of paper can go into the green bin.
The green bin. Okay, so keeping things in the recycling bin clean and dry is what's going to make it marketable, to make it to the place where it can, in fact, be recycled. If not, it's going to be rejected, and then it goes to landfill.
Then it goes to landfill.
Landfill. All right. We have an email from Skylar in Marin. I know some people don't like to compost. Maybe to make it easier, you could provide a small under-the-counter trash can like a starter kit for composting. You're nodding there, Debbie. Is this something
we've tried? It's a great idea. Yes, we have small green pails. And I see Supervisor Tang nodding as well. Do you use those?
I have one at my home, yes.
And Catherine?
I don't actually use a green bin. Instead, I keep mine in a bowl in the freezer until it's time to put it in the compost bin. So that way I don't have to have it taking up counter space. And if it is a little stinky, I don't have to smell it.
That is so smart.
All right. So let's go to a call. Jenny from San Francisco, welcome to the program.
Hi. Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Okay. I've noticed there's a lot of disposable coffee cups on the ground. And I wonder if places could use some other materials or if people could bring their own cups. Also, I wrote my thesis on dumpster diving, which is I studied trash around the country, and it was pretty disturbing.
How much is thrown away?
Yeah. I mean, there's scavengers who live off of what we discard, basically. And there's a lot of stigma against reusing things, which is sad because 100 years ago we didn't throw so much away. And then there's a good book called Waste and Wants. It's a history of trash and how we used to reuse everything.
Well, thank you so much, Jenny, for your call. Katie Tang, you want to say something there?
Sure. I mean, I thought it was fascinating she brought up the issue around coffee cups, and that is actually what initiated our interest in legislation around kind of all the sort of foodware that we use and what it is that we could do actually legislatively to address it. We started out thinking about the beverage cups, but then it led us on a path to addressing the issue with plastic straws. And so we introduced legislation recently in partnership with our Department of Environment to ban the use of plastic straws in San Francisco. And that includes even plastic compostable straws. And we figure that that might be sort of the entry awareness issue for people to say, wow, do you know how much plastic we discard every day? I think it was an estimate of 1 million plastic straws that we use in San Francisco on a daily basis, and what that does to our marine life, our ocean. We'll have more plastic in our ocean than you know, fish in the sea or, you know, what have you in the future. So it is quite disturbing, and there's been this huge momentum around that issue, and you see so many different countries and cities adopting regulations around plastic straws. And then I think that enlightens people to think about, you know, what are some other single-use plasticware that you use on a daily basis, including maybe the coffee cup lids or the lid plugs or the stirrers or whatever it is. And so our legislation, first of all, addresses the plastic straws, but we also say that, hey, when you have large events in the city, we want you to use, you know, 10% of your beverage cups needs to be reusable, like a mug or something. But yes, ideally, eventually, I think we'd like to get to the point where we are encouraging people to bring their own coffee mugs to the shops, their own tea mugs. I've started doing that, and I think that's a very simple way to try to make little adjustments in your life where you can make a big impact. And sometimes it feels too daunting if we're talking about zero waste and how it is that me as an individual person can help alleviate this problem. Again, too overwhelming. So think about next time you're at a restaurant, refuse that plastic straw, right? You can drink without it, absolutely, unless you're drinking tapioca, but it's a different story. Maybe you can bring your own coffee mug. Maybe you can bring your own reusable grocery bags, right? The little, instead of getting those plastic bags to put your vegetables in, right? Those are some of the little things that I've tried to do myself, and I think everyone can do that.
And so you're still in crafting this legislation?
The legislation has actually been introduced, but we you know, after we pass it, there could be more that we want to tap on.
And what's been the response so far?
It's been overwhelming. We have people contacting us from all over the city, all over the state, even other countries. And for the first time, out of all the pieces of legislation I've worked on, I've been contacted by a lot of children, which has been amazing. Some schools have actually adopted this issue of plastic straws as their advocacy issue of the year.
Wow. So it's putting those 25 to 35-year-olds to shame.
Oh, yeah.
Let me reintroduce the program. This is City Visions on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. I'm Joseph Pache. And tonight, we're speaking about San Francisco's efforts to get back on track for zero waste. It's not going to happen in 2020, but we're committed to, it sounds like, to making it happen. We have guests here that are working on this issue. Debbie Raffel, Director of the San Francisco Department of the Environment, Supervisor Katie Tang, representing District 4, and who has just introduced legislation that would ban plastic straws and other single-use items in the city, and Catherine Kellogg, and she's a writer, and she goes to the Church of Recycling every day, it sounds like, with her writing, GoingZeroWaste.com, and author of an upcoming book, 101 Ways to Go Zero Waste. Again, the number to dial to join our conversation is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can also email us at cityvisions@klw.org or post a comment at the KLW website, and you can also tweet us at cityvisionsKALW. So let's go to Daya from San Francisco. Welcome to the program.
Information. Thank you. I wanted to just say that I was just in Mexico City, and they have outlawed plastic straws, and in restaurants they give you metal straws, which they wash, which I think is a great option. And you were also talking about children, and I live in a building with about 200 units, and it's just shocking the amount of garbage people produce and how they can't figure out what bins to use, and there's all these plastic bags that go in the compost, even though there's signs everywhere. And I was thinking that maybe in terms of children, the best way to train the adults is to train the kids, have like a some kind of big public campaign, train the kids and have the kids kind of monitor their parents. So that was one idea. And then the second question I had for about Recology, Recology came to our building and said that a huge number of landfill, things in landfill is fabric. And so I've been saving things like my old yoga pants and my old socks, but I don't know, like, where do you put them? Do you put them in a special bag? I looked on Recology's website, and it's not really clear. So I think that information would be really useful to share.
Thanks so much, Daya, for your call. So Debbie Raphael, the Department of the Environment here in San Francisco, let's break that up into two pieces. What is, you've talked about education and outreach. Tell us a little bit more about, are you targeting kids?
Oh, you
who,
bet.
Who are you and how do you target them? And how do you get the adults to pay attention?
The caller was right on when she said that it's the best police of adults are the children. And in fact, we educate 25,000 school kids every year, our department. So we have a wonderful school education program. We focus on the elementary schools, and they have our listeners. If you grew up in San Francisco or recently were a student, you'll remember Phoebe the Phoenix. She goes to schools and educates kids. We have all sorts of contests. We have incredible compost monitors in all of the school cafeterias who help the students understand what goes where. I would say that our students are some of the best recyclers and composters probably on the planet. Our challenge is to keep them motivated once they get to high school. So I could use some advice on how to motivate our high school age students so they remember what they learned in elementary school. But it's absolutely right. The kids are the future, and they are wonderful recyclers and composters.
Hmm. I want to go to a next caller. Let's go to Philip in Brisbane. Philip in Brisbane.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
Yes. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. Let me commend you for what you're doing. I'd like to give one short tip, which seems unrelated, but it's not, and then ask you a question. My tip is this. For people that are really concerned about conserving resources, if you just put a little bowl under the sink where you wash your hands and save that water, you can save gallons of water every day. And flush your toilet with it, your water bill will go way, way down. And the same thing with your kitchen sink. If you're really dedicated, you can water all your plants with that water that you save that otherwise would go down the drain. And I'm saving a tremendous amount of money over time on my water bill. And my question is this. I'd like to know if we have a greater security regarding identity theft from documents that go into the blue bin. How secure is that connection from the home to the reuse facility, pulping or whatever it is? Because I have an attic full of old documents. I can't afford to have them shredded. I can't shred them all. What should I do? Can I just take the chance and put them in the blue bin? Or what do you recommend?
All right. Thanks so much for your call. Getting a lot of shaking heads here. So, Debbie, I think you're the best person to ask.
Yeah. I mean, if anyone has ever been to Recycle Central and you see the big mass that gets emptied out of the trucks from the blue that are collecting the blue bins, it seems like it's all, mangled together. But I would just say that people's privacy, if it's important, then you need to take it into your own hands and be careful. And, you know, yes, shredding is a challenge because actually shredded paper is very difficult to recycle. It makes a mess in Recycle Central, so it's very, very challenging to recycle it. What we'd prefer is that you just cut out, if you can, the identifiers and recycle the rest. But it's privacy is an issue for sure.
Yeah, so no easy answer there. I forgot the second part of the previous caller's question, which was about fabric. What to do with fabric?
Fabric's a great point. We, in our office, in the Department of the Environment, we have this, 12-foot-high stack of different colored clothing. And next to it, it says this amount of textiles gets disposed of in San Francisco every 7 minutes. So it's a huge area. And the challenge is that entities like Goodwill will take it and they will do the best they can. But sometimes people have a single sock or a shirt that's highly stained, and really Goodwill can't deal with that. But what we suggest is that people do take things to Goodwill, and there's also receptacles all over the city in basements and in parking garages. Go ahead and put the materials in there. Those entities will sort. Now, you wouldn't want to put something that's stained with oils or things that would hurt a whole other amount of fabric. But go ahead, err on the side of putting it in, giving it to Goodwill of the Salvation Army. They will sort and they find uses for the single socks and the items that can't be resold.
But definitely not compostable and recyclable.
It's not compostable. We're trying to figure out how to accept it in the blue bin, but right now we're still struggling with how to make it as easy as everything else.
And going back to your point of, Catherine, of waiting 30 days before you buy something new, I've also heard that even if you get your clothes to Goodwill, it's not like that there's a perfect marketplace for that. There's a lot of overstock, so to speak, of donated clothing.
As prices have been driven lower and lower and lower with fast fashion, we're seeing much lower quality pieces. So people are spending a lot more and getting a lot more, and it's lasting not as long. And so we're just overwhelmed with the amount of stuff. And then when people are shopping the secondhand market, typically they're picking up lower quality pieces. So really, if you're waiting and you're saving, then maybe you can invest in something that's just a little bit higher quality that you can take and get repaired or even repair it yourself.
And I think it's I want to make sure we get to another part of Philip's point, which is if we have to wash our recyclables, how do we wash them in a way that doesn't waste water? Right? And so I think his idea there of trying to save your water, I imagine, Philip, you probably use that saved water to wash your recyclables as well, right? So I know he's no longer on the line, but just a point there of like, how do we balance how we're using different resources? Yeah, Catherine.
I think it's really important that we also look at the water used in the upstream.
Yes.
I know we're going back to the waste upstream, which we've talked about several times, but it takes 3 liters of water to make 1 bottled liter of water. So rinsing out our recyclables, if we're able to purify our plastic, if we're actually able to get that recycled, we're actually cutting down water in the long run. Even though we don't see it, we're still conserving.
So let's go to some more comments and calls here. We have William from Belvedere who wants to join a conversation.
Yes,
hi, William.
Thank you very much. I think there may have been a misunderstanding projected, and one of the guests said that she seemed to be implying we make money on recycling. I think it's different to say we make money on it than to say that it partially offsets the cost that would otherwise exist if we were sending it to the landfill, and I think the latter is really the case. There isn't really such a thing as recycling plastic. There's downcycling, because you can do it once, but you can't do it again. And I think that out of sight, out of mind, is the attitude that's taken, it's off to be recycled, but after it gets made into a park bench, I believe that the experts there will tell you that there's a point 1 or 2 steps down the line when it goes to the landfill, because it cannot be further recycled.
And how are things going there in Marin?
Well, we have a very difficult situation here. Because of the convenience aspect, our local pickup people went to what's called single stream. And now, particularly because the Chinese workers want to earn more, so that they're not taking the messed up stuff that they used to get before, our pickup here in Mill Valley, Belvedere, Tiburon, and Southern Marin is having to be driven all the way to San Jose. And when it gets to San Jose, the recycler down there is rejecting 20% of it because of the contamination. And the tipping fee per ton, that means every time the truck dumps a ton, which used to be $4 a ton, has now gone to $80 a ton because the markets have dried up. So perhaps whatever's taking place in San Francisco, it's not taking place in Marin. So perhaps the guests could comment on the points that I discussed.
Thank you so much, William. Okay, Debbie.
There's a lot raised.
Yes.
William knows a lot about solid waste, you can tell. All right, let's see if I can remember his. So the point he raised is what I meant to say. So if I wasn't clear, I appreciate, William, you clarifying that we aren't making money on recycling. It lowers the garbage rate because we can use that revenue to offset some of the costs. But you're absolutely right. This is not a for-profit endeavor. The issue – oh, my goodness. Now I am – Help me.
So about downcycling.
Oh, downcycling. Yeah, that was a great point. So it is not necessary to downcycle, but it's possible to downcycle. So what is important is to try and find end uses that are not downcycling so that a plastic container becomes a new plastic container. Because William is correct. Once you take your metal and make rebar out of it, or if you take your plastics and make a park bench out of it, you are downcycling so that when that item comes to the end of its life, there's much less option for that material. So it's very important that we try and do what we call highest and best use. That's our marching orders. That's our guiding principle. And in highest and best use, you always try and find a new life that is able to be recycled again and again. Ultimately, the real answer here is, of course, is not recycling and recycling and downcycling. It's reduce. It's not generating so much plastic to begin with. That is the goal for all of us here on the panel today. And we understand that in all of the ways that we either work as individuals or on policy.
So, Catherine Kellogg, I want to get back to you. We still have a lot of calls coming in with people wanting to talk about some of the points we've already raised. But I also want to make sure in the last 10, 15 minutes of the program, we get to some concrete, actionable tips that people can use. What's the framework you use to help sort of reorganize the way that you bring products or not into your life and then what you do with them after?
I think it's really amazing. Once you actually start to see plastic, once you actually start to notice it, it becomes overwhelming because it is everywhere. It is on everything. And so trying to actively avoid it to the best of our ability. And Katie, I believe, already mentioned 3 points of the big four, which is where I tell everyone to start, which is say no to straws, bring your own coffee cup, bring your own reusable water bottle, and bring your own bags to the grocery store.
And how long have you been doing this?
I have been trying to avoid plastic for probably around 6 years, but I didn't officially start going zero waste until 2015.
And how do you define zero waste?
So the simple definition is sending nothing to a landfill, but the more complex definition, which I really like because it's much more nuanced, is about writing waste out of existence. It's about moving to a circular economy or a closed loop where waste isn't the byproduct. Right now, we design items that are destined to go to the landfill. And that does fall somewhat on companies because they aren't allowing their products to be repaired. They're not allowing their products to be sent back for deconstruction and reconstruction of new items. They just expect you to throw it out. And oftentimes they make it really difficult because it is almost more expensive to repair an item than it is to buy a new one. And so I think it's really, really important that we start looking at better solutions that will reduce waste overall.
And so how have you done?
I've done pretty well. So the first 2 years, I really challenged myself. And in 2 years, I produced a 16-ounce mason jar worth of trash.
Wow.
Yeah. And a lot of that was done just by thinking a little bit outside of the box. I don't think we have waste problems. Sometimes I think we have creative thinking problems. Because oftentimes, it's just taking 2 seconds to think, is there a better way? So recently I was at a cafe and I needed something to stir my coffee and I looked and I saw plastic spoons and plastic stirrers and that was right there. But if I just turned slightly to the right, then there was the entire silverware bar. So I could just take a real spoon, use a real spoon and then place it in the tub for the dishwasher. So just by taking 2 seconds to look, think a little different, being brave and being able to ask a question, I go get takeout all the time because I know we all like convenience. But instead, I bring my own container. And I find just smiling and saying, hey, I would really like that sandwich to go in this container. I'm never told no. Hmm. They always put the sandwich right there in my container. I can take my salad or my sandwich. I go, I eat it, I wash my dish, and no waste was created in the process. And it was very, very convenient.
And what's your dish made out of?
Glass.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent. We have several calls to get to here. Let's go to Tina. Tina from San Francisco. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I wanted to mention something that the lady who was just talking just mentioned, and that is when I go to a restaurant, I always take a plastic container with me for if I have something to go. So I put it in there instead of getting a to-go thing. And the other thing that I wanted to say that I do is with my, if I have old clothes that I'm going to get rid of, I cut them up into rags. I use them for cleaning old socks. I use them for polishing shoes, for shoe polish, and rags for cleaning my bicycle, which is really greasy. So I do that. And then the other, one other comment that I wanted to make is I tuned in halfway through the show, so I'm wondering if you have a podcast or something so that I could listen to the beginning part.
Absolutely. Just go to klw.org and look up City Visions, and you can see this show and many others.
Okay.
Thanks so much for your call and your comments.
Thank you.
We have an email from Rose. Says the first mistake was to quote-unquote de-emphasize enforcement. So this goes back to something we talked about earlier on in the program, which is when legislation that mandated recycling and composting went into effect in 2009 and 2012, respectively. Enforcement was not a big part of that that push. She goes on to say, the maintenance man in my apartment building puts all the garbage into one bin, sometimes the blue, sometimes the black. When he puts out the trash for recycling. Since there are only 10 units in my building, it will be a long time before you get around to enforcement there. I load my recycling onto my bicycle about once a week and bring it to my friend's apartment building where their recycling system is better, but I'm sure there are so many other buildings where recycling is paid no attention to. I got another email from Verena who says, I have had a serious issue with the SF Chronicle. They used to deliver the paper in plastic bags only on rainy days. However, now my paper arrives in a plastic bag every day. I've called the Chronicle 3 times already because I'm still getting the plastic bags. I live in Berkeley. So a couple of comments there. We have another email from Glenn in San Francisco saying, I am a recent transplant to the Bay Area and frankly find consumers' level of understanding regarding the importance of clean recycling uneven at best. What would you suggest we do to address this confusion, and can any of these efforts be better leveraged across a wider area and to a greater effect? And a second question, I was taken by the point made regarding Chinese demand falling away. As we live in the heart of innovation, have you seen or heard any good examples of creative, innovative alternative uses for our recycled materials as a means to address the potential supply-demand imbalance? Perhaps that's the question we start with there. Who wants to take that one?
Those are great questions and great observations. So I would just say to folks that if you go on our website, if you're in an apartment building and you feel like, or in an office building, and you feel like some signage would help, because this sort of uneven knowledge is very true, we've got a sign maker tool on our website, sfenvironment.gov or sfenvironment.org. If you go to sfenvironment.org, you can look for our sign maker tool and you can print out signs. And then what we suggest you do is take actual items and tape them onto the sign so that people really understand what goes where. In terms of innovation, you know, we are at the center of innovation here in the Bay Area. And we say we care about jobs. We say we care about green jobs. So my challenge is, how do we maximize the kind of opportunities of manufacturing here in California to take all this waste that we're generating and shipping overseas? Let's figure out what we can make with it right here in California.
Supervisor Tang, is that something that the Board of Supervisors could tackle?
Well, I think that, I mean, certainly in terms of just reaching zero waste goals in general, as Debbie mentioned earlier, one of my colleagues did introduce legislation around what it is that we can hold more people accountable based on the last person who wrote in about enforcement. So I think that we were lenient earlier on, gave our large buildings sort of the, I wouldn't say a pass, but we said, you know, let's start with the please, as Debbie mentioned. But now that there has been, you know, I guess studies showing that we're not really reaching the goals, well, we're going to have to use the stick part, right? And so instead of just the carrots. So we'll see how that legislation goes, and I think it will be tough, but we have to do it.
And how can the city incentivize corporations or other companies to innovate around how we use our waste?
I mean, I think, you know, it's fascinating because actually I did meet a CEO of a company who was very into and very knowledgeable about great types of design in terms of foodware, right? And wanting to implement that, and actually did. So came up with this fabulous design for a compostable salad box, if you will. Unfortunately, people would take them to go, and they would go to their offices, and they look like plastic, so they would put in the recycling bin. And so then she said she had to actually stop using that particular material because people were putting the wrong bins, and it was actually creating more problems. So there's this issue of, yes, we have people who want to innovate, who have, but then we also have other implementation challenges on the back end. So I don't know how to resolve that issue at this moment, but that's why I really do feel that the refusal of items, first and foremost, is really key.
Let's go to Joanne from San Francisco. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Welcome.
We have only a couple of minutes, so please yes. be brief with your comment.
I'll be brief. Number one, I think that it would be good to get the neighborhood trash bins back on the corners, so that we could create habits for adults and children to put their compostables or their garbage into the various bins. In many neighborhoods, they took them away thinking it might be full of household garbage, but that's got to go somewhere too. But we still need those bins. That's number one. Number two, I think that we were doing better when we had the home compost with worm composting bins that were given to us by the city, because I worry about when we put our compost into the green bins, by the time it's picked up and processed, I believe that most of the nutritional value has deteriorated because of the time. There's mold and fungus.
I'm going to have to cut you off there because we want to get an answer to your question, but thanks so much for your call. So, Debbie, are we going to bring back the neighborhood corner bins?
Yeah, that's a challenging question, and it has to do with how well people sort them. Sometimes we find that three bins in public spaces are actually highly contaminated because they're not curated well, but we are interested in trying them out in specific locations and seeing if we can find the secret to success. In terms of the compost, I just want to assure everybody the quality of San Francisco's compost surpasses anyone. We sell it out every year. Every load is sold to farmers, mostly to vineyards, and they are so happy to get it.
Great. So we have a couple of minutes left in the program. Catherine Kellogg, where can people go to learn more about if they want to adopt some of the principles you talked about earlier, some of the practices?
Absolutely. I promise it is much easier than it sounds. It just takes a few minutes. And if you would like to head on over to my blog, it is goingzerowaste.com. And I have a whole tab for beginners and also a top 10 place to get started, which was my first blog post and still my best performing post on the blog.
And Supervisor Tang, how can people give feedback and input into your legislation or support it or make comments about it to get rid of some of the single-use plastic that you're trying to get?
Well, we welcome any emails to me, which is katie.tang@sfgov.org, katie.tang@sfgov.org, or they can call our office at 415-554-7460.
And when's it up for vote?
Well, it's still making its way through the committee process, so we don't know exactly yet, but hopefully soon.
Okay. And then, Debbie Raphael, what's your best prediction about when San Francisco will get to zero waste?
As soon as everyone works as hard as Catherine.
So we're talking about new legislation. We're talking about enforcement. We're talking about education. Yes. Anything else that you would say that could get us there?
You know, the path is really clear. It's not a mystery. And it's going to take all of us doing our part. It's going to take the businesses redesigning their products, the entrepreneurs figuring out better uses for the end of life. And at the end of the day, it's going to take commitment from everyone.
All right. So we're all in this together is the point of this conversation. So let's all do our part. That's City Visions for this evening. Sorry to all the amazing callers that I know we still had on the line and couldn't get to. But I want to thank our guests, Debbie Raphael, Director of the San Francisco Department of the Environment, San Francisco Supervisor Katie Tang, and Catherine Kellogg, author and creator of the website goingzerowaste.com. Yes. Thank you all for joining me this evening.
Thank you.
For a link to this and other City Vision shows, let us know what you thought about tonight's program. To subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, visit the City Visions page at klw.org. Our engineer this evening was David Latulipe. Tonight's show was produced by Jennifer Ruick. We'll be off next week for the Independence Day celebration. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. Good night.